the decision was a small decision here, a small experience there, and it next thing we knew, you know, like you said, suddenly we found ourselves in Europe. I have a disease called spinal muscular atrophy, which puts me in a wheelchair. My legs don't work very well, and my arms don't work very well, and I don't really have a lot of balance control and a lot of strength. As you get through this first experience and you kind of say, well, I survived that. What else can I do? We called the fundraiser We Carry Kevin. And it was this idea that my friends were going to take me and, you know, we're doing this thing together. And basically, we want to break all the rules that you have listed. Can you help us do that in a safe and secure way?
Kevin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Jose. Thank you for having me.
Hi, and welcome back to El Camino People, the podcast with me, your host, Jose Maria Tapa Ardana. In today's episode, bring us a truly remarkable individual. Joining us is Kevin Chandler, the man who, along with his friends, embarked in a journey all across Europe, leaving his wheelchair behind and being carried on a backpack by his friends. Let me welcome my now friend, Kevin. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Jose. Thank you for having me.
And a lot of people were saying, I'm like, and I was talking with Kevin right now, and he's like, I haven't walked the Camino. I'm like, I don't care. I'm not El Camino de Santiago people. I'm El Camino people. And the Camino, the journey that you have done with your friends, it's incredible. So thank you for being here and to have this time with us.
Yeah, thanks.
So first question, you haven't walked the Camino de Santiago, but have you heard about the Camino de Santiago?
I have. I've had a handful of friends who have done it over the years. You and I were talking earlier. I've seen the movie The Way, you know, which doesn't mean that I know the whole thing, but I think my wife has actually read some books about it as well. And so it's especially from what my friends have told me about it from their personal experience, I would really love to be part of it someday. And it's definitely on the list of something to do.
So you have one list, like everybody that is in the Camino, the list of hikes, the list of places you want to go?
I do. And I feel like every day, you know, there's a list, but then the order of the list kind of shifts.
And also the list keeps growing and keeps growing. I'm like, every time I talk with someone, I was like, you know, researching, I'm like, yeah, I haven't been to China, so maybe I need to go to China. Maybe new Camino over here. It's horrible. Yeah.
Well, and I found it kind of funny that, you know, there's big things on the list, like the El Camino. There's Israel. I'd love to go. Not right now, but you know, sometime. And there's some other places in the world. Have some friends all over South Africa. I'd like to see some parts there. But then there's stuff right here in the U.S. that's, you know, a couple hours drive, and or it'd just be an afternoon hike, you know, and that's as high on the list as all of the other epic things. And so it's really just what is closest to the heart, because the reason is not just to see something, but it's the people that you're with and the history and the heart behind it. So yeah, there's just a preciousness. Oh.
Totally agree with that. You can put the people, the heart, and the history. I think, you know, that summarizes what the Camino or any hike. You know, I've been hiking all my life. Prior to walk the Camino, I used to do more like long distance hike. But right now, I think to the point that I found a lot of pleasure in doing a 1 hour hike, a 2 hours, one day, even the closest things to home. Because sometimes, I don't know if it, you know, in the States is the same, but here we always leave what is close to home for the latest. You know, the Camino is kind of like the thing that I will do when I retire. It's always here. I will always have time to do it.
Yeah. The things closest to you seem to be not highest because they're available, right?
So let's go to the beginning. So a couple of years ago, suddenly you and your friends decided that it was time to roll the wall in a different way. How did the Carry Kevin start? How was the beginning? What was the beginning of the journey?
I feel like with most things in life, the decision was a small decision here, a small experience there, and it next thing we knew, you know, like you said, suddenly We found ourselves in Europe, but I grew up. I have a disease called spinal muscular atrophy, which puts me in a wheelchair. My legs don't work very well, and my arms don't work very well, and I don't really have a lot of balance control and a lot of strength. And so my sister also has the same disease, and so we grew up in this home of two wheelchairs, and we have an older brother who does not have it. And he was a great playmate for us. And my parents were very creative and I would say courageous to say, well, we're going to raise our kids as normal as possible. And so our door is going to be open. People can come in and see what our life looks like on a daily basis. We're going to let the world in so that our kids can see it. But we're also going to send them out. We're not just going to cocoon them in this, house. And so we were involved in the community, and I played soccer until the kids were too big, and if they ran into me, it'd be bad news. But and then I helped coach because I could do that from the sidelines, and played in a band, and went to regular school, and sat in the regular classes, and we were part of a church and a youth group, and went to summer camp, and so we just did a lot of normal family things. And it was a lot more work for us, but that didn't mean we couldn't do it. And so I grew up in this home that very much kind of crossed the bridge into the able-bodied world and invited the able-bodied world into our world as well. It makes sense, I think, that when I grew up and moved away, moved out of my parents' house and everything, that I kind of continued that. That was my mindset, my understanding. And so I have guys that come in to take care of me at the house. They're not hired caregivers. They're just friends. They're not professionally trained. They're, teachers and, musicians, and they're just guys. And so I just kind of lived this life out in the world. And so from that, one day a friend and I were talking about doing something without my wheelchair, because we had had a few experiences where we went to dinner at a friend's house and they had steps, so we left my wheelchair van. And so we said, well, what if we intentionally left my wheelchair at home and did something kind of crazy? And he said, well, I've always wanted to explore the sewers in our hometown. What do you think? And so he developed this backpack. It was very makeshift. It pretty much fell apart by the end of the evening of using it, but it worked. And we got some guys together, and we went urban spelunking. We explored the sewers in our hometown under the college that he had graduated from. And
So how old were you at the time?
so I was probably 28, 29, something like
Okay,
that.
so old enough to be smart enough to know that you were doing something crazy, but not too old to say like that. But you
Right,
didn't
not
think
this
any
work.
of going into a hike or going into, I don't know. You think to going into the shores of the college.
Yeah, it was just, hey, this could be fun to do. And I think this happens when we talk about hiking, like you've talked about the people around the world that you've met and talked with who have done trails, is you get through this first experience and you kind of say, well, I survived that. What else can I do? And the nice thing is it wasn't just me, it was this group of guys who had gone into the sewers. And namely my friend Tom, whose idea it was. And so a few months went by,
Did you have any knowledge about design or anybody knew anything about materials? Or was just, you know, let's gonna get this backpack, try to make it as, you know,
Oh,
as MacGyver as we can, and let's do it.
Yeah, very much a MacGyver thing. I mean, to be very honest, the first backpack that we took into the sewers, Tom had a like a backpack frame, like a metal, you know, like the metal frames. He stripped it down. He put it on his coffee table in his living room and laid me on top of it, and then took two or three E&O hammocks and used them to like strap me down to it. And that was it. And then he put me on his back. I mean, it was rough. It was bad.
You think lower than that will be just duct tape you to his back. And that
I
will
know.
Be
the... Yeah. Might as well just duct tape me on there. Yep. And so a few months later, I realized, you know, I'd always wanted to go to Europe. Especially my dad's side of the family is from England and Ireland not very long ago. And so I just feel I felt a draw there. I still do, actually. And I'd always dreamed of being part of that world. A lot of my favorite writers are like late 1800s British authors. I don't know why, but it's just what I like. One of my favorite musicians was Django Reinhardt, who was in Paris and, well, France and kind of surrounding countries, because he was a gypsy, but wandered around. But he was a really important, impactful part of my life, especially through high school and college. As my disabilities got worse, as they progressed, I looked at his life and said, well, he didn't let things slow him down, even though he had physical barriers with disability. He got creative and he rethought things. And not only did he make it work, but he actually, he was groundbreaking, you know, and so you don't just have to get by. And so I wanted to see where he had lived, and I wanted to see where these authors and my family had been. And so I went back to Tom and a couple other guys and said, hey, what if we do what we did back home? What if we do that in Europe above ground for 3 weeks?
So you switched from one day in the sewers with that, really just to a whole trip of 3 weeks in Europe.
Whole three
Nothing
weeks.
In between. There was like, let's go for a week here or a weekend. No.
Yeah, no. And I mean, so between the time of planning and going, we did a lot of like, you know, afternoon hikes just to kind of build up our, you know, because we also had to design the backpack and worked with some great people on that. And my dad was he's retired now, but he was an airplane mechanic. So he had a lot of design input as well. But yeah, so we did a lot of walking and hiking, building up to it. But part of it being 3 weeks was, we wanted to be very present every place that we went. We didn't want to just stop in for a day and have a cool experience. We wanted to, you know, get an apartment in the heart of Paris and, you know, have to go downstairs and cross the street to get breakfast every morning for 5 days, you know, and walk the streets and get lost and realize where we are because we've been here before and that kind of thing. And so, we did.
How are you deciding where to go? I'm like, when you come for the first time to Europe, it's one of the biggest things. I'm like, when we go to the States, I'm like, where do we go? I'm like, yeah, we have to go to New York. We have to go to, but I'm like, at the end, 3 weeks is 3 weeks. It's what it is.
Right. It still feels like not enough. I know. So I the guys were really gracious to leave it up to me, and they said, where do you want to go? And so I kind of, there were a few other places that we considered. We considered Scotland and, you know, but I think we just, as we talked about it and we figured out the time frame and we figured out where we knew people and, you know, that kind of thing. Because, like, in England, we stayed with a family, which was really great, and helped us to have someone local who said, hey, I know this trail through the woods. Let's go for a walk. We thought it would be a mile, turned out to be 6 miles. He left that small detail out, but still was amazing and worth every minute of it. But yeah, so it just kind of narrowed it down and decided on France, England, and Ireland. And then we stopped in Wales on the way to Ireland. So.
But this project wasn't something that you were going just as is France. You created a crowdfunding campaign to crowdfund the trip.
Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, the guys that take care of me are, you know, teachers and musicians and, you know, just kind of not, we were all broke, basically. That's the
Yeah, they're not making the big bucks.
Right. And so when we had this idea for this trip, we realized, oh, that, you know, we don't have the finances for this. And so said, well, what if we do a crowdfunding, a GoFundMe campaign and just see if we can raise it that way. And it took, I would say, like the first month and a half, it was kind of slow going. It looked like it probably wasn't going to happen. And then a local news station did a story about it. And within about 24 hours, that hit the national cycle. And by Monday, we had most of it raised. And
it's incredible how the engagement and the traction that is called on marketing. And like, you know, I've been doing a couple of crowdfunding campaigns, and how important it is that you have the people to boost it on a couple of first days.
Yeah.
If not, it's going to be quite hard to raise, but I'm just glad that you guys made it.
Yeah. And I think there's an element of, you know, if it's not coming together, you should be aware of that, but don't worry, you know, because you never know what's going to really kick it into high gear. And so, yeah, it was a kind of a crazy experience, but we called the fundraiser We Carry Kevin. And it was this idea that my friends were going to take me and, you know, we're doing this thing together. So I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but when we got home from Europe, we had heard from so many families all over the world that said, where did you get this backpack? And where did you get these friends? Those were the two main questions. And so we started a nonprofit and called it We Carry Kevin, because that's what.
So how did you guys come up with the name? Because some people, you know, when I think about this, a lot of people, you know, and people that have been working with people with disabilities, sometimes they don't want to be pushed. They don't want to think. But in this case, We Carry Kevin. They were carrying you. How did you come up with the name? What was the idea?
Yeah. It was actually, I'm trying to remember because it just kind of came together. But something that my sister pointed out to me was, because she's a language person, she said, well, in that phrase, we carry Kevin, Kevin is not the subject. We is the subject. That's the focus, you know, who's doing the thing, it's we. And so it was really important to us to realize that this was like a team of, you know, a real group doing something together. And so, yeah, I think we wanted to keep it short, keep it simple. These guys were carrying me in a backpack. So we carry Kevin just kind of happened. I'm sure there's 100 other great ways to say it, and if we had chosen one of them,
I don't think so. Really, I think it's the perfect name, as you were saying. I'm like the whole world at the end, you know, with the crowdfunding plus your friends plus everybody that made you carry you, and there's no problem in being carried by others.
Right.
We all do in different times of our lives.
Yeah.
And I think being so short and so easy is just why it's. I'm like, when I first saw, you know, the post on Facebook, I'm like, We Carry Kevin. I'm like, I need to know what about this thing is. I'm like, it's
right. Well,
so simple
you,
that it's.
Yeah, because you are part of that we, right? Like we.
That's the thing.
Yeah. I mean.
It's all about the people.
Right. It's all about everyone involved. And you actually, the way you said that reminded me that part of that conversation was, well, it's not just these five guys. That's not the we. The we is the, you know, 200 people that gave to the GoFundMe, and the, you know, however many thousand people that followed us on Instagram to track with the whole thing, and the news anchors that shared the story. Like, all of these people are the we. And so, yeah, that was kind
so
of
how was the planning? Because you were saying, you know, you have this backpack, but did you contact any, you know, backpack company or any manufacturer? Or because at the end, like, you were switching for one day, you know, a couple hours, and like, yeah, if something happens, you are just, you know, one ride from home, but you are going all the way to Europe.
Well,
so if something happens, you are totally screwed.
Right. We wondered if this thing already existed, you know, and so we started researching online. We couldn't find the right thing. And so what we ended up doing is, when you were in the States, did you ever go to an REI?
Of course, for us, you know, REI is or Decathlon, but kind of like high-end Decathlon.
Yeah, exactly. And so we went to an REI and kind of explained to one of the sales reps what we wanted to do and said, could we just try all your child carriers? You know, the ones
that react. I'm like, when you see, you know, a grown man, like, I want to try one of those baby carriers and to go to Europe.
I mean, I think God just gave us the right guy, because he was like, all right, sure. and so Tom and myself and one other guy went and we tried out a couple, and we settled on the Kid Comfort 3, I think, from a company called Deuter.
One of the top, my biggest backpack is Deuter, and I love it to death. Now I switch, I'm sorry, to a custom tape from the UK, but it's an incredible backpack.
Oh, they're so good, and they've been making them for 150 years. I mean, there's a reason they know what they're doing. Yep. And so what we did was we actually contacted them and said, hey, we love your backpack. This is what we're going to do on the trip. Kevin is, you know, 30 years old and weighs, your weight limit is 45 pounds. Kevin's 65 pounds. Basically, we want to break all the rules that you have listed. Can you help us do that in a safe and secure way? And they were awesome. They actually worked with us every step of the way and on the design. So we had to, you know, we had the base to work with. And then we, for example, we designed a new seat that distributed the weight better. And I needed some head control support and stuff like that. And so we made some changes, which took a few months. And but I mean, they said, hey, if you order one, we'll send you a second one for free, just so that if you're changing it and something is irreversible, you have a backup. And
they tailor-made the backpack just for you.
So they sent us the backpack, and then we tailor for ourselves in my parents' kitchen with an X-Acto knife and some styrofoam. And what we did was we did one, and then the other one we wrapped up in cellophane and duct tape and took with us on the trip as a backup in case something broke on the first one, which it didn't. So we ended up giving it away to another family, which was cool. But anyways, we worked with Deuter, and the best thing about that is when we got home from the trip and all these people were asking, where did you get this backpack? We actually reached back out to Deuter and said, hey, if we send you our backpack, would you make a factory version of what we did? And they were happy to, and we actually kind of tweaked it a bit since we'd had three weeks of using it. And so they made a version that was actually like rated for 70 pounds instead of and so people don't have to break the rules. And they took our seat that we designed and they made a professional version and just did some really cool stuff. And then they have ever since then, since 2019, they've been producing those for us. And then we distribute them to families all over the world. And we're actually on version 2.0 because we've gotten feedback from enough families that we could say, all right, let's do a new version. So
that's amazing. So at the beginning, when you were planning the first week, Eric Evan, with your friends, what was the goal of the trip? Like, what were your goals from you and your friends?
Oh, we were just some dumb guys having fun. You know, we wanted to see, some of the guys had been to Europe, but there were just some things that we wanted to see and do together. We were just friends, guys being guys, you know, and, there was
no, I know. I have a couple of those friends.
Yeah. And there was no, you know, deeper, you know, how will this change the world kind of idea. But I think that's how the best things happen is, we set out to have fun and next thing we know, people's lives are being changed for the better. So, yeah.
How was that the arrival in Europe? Suddenly you are in Europe, a total different country. And here you are a bunch of guys. It was five friends of you and plus you or how many?
Yeah. So, we had, let me think, one, two. So there were four guys carrying me and two guys filming. Cause we thought, well, if we're going to do this, we need proof that we did it. So, yeah, had two guys come and film with us. So, so I guess there were seven of us total. Yeah.
So suddenly four guys carrying, two guys filming and a guy in a backpack. How did the world react to something like that?
Well, also the funny thing is, I don't know why we did this, but we started the trip in France and it's like, none of us know French. Like, why did we start?
French people are weird.
Why did we start there? We should have started somewhere else and eased our way into that. But for some reason, that's what we did. But also, we were there during the 2016 Euro Cup.
Wow.
And it was, so, I mean, so Paris is like already a busy place. And then you add that and it was just nuts. And it was the first time in like, what, 70, 75 years that Wales was actually in the playoffs. And so you have all these
nutcracks coming Wales from
just like going nuts in the subway there. I mean, I still can see in my memory walking down the street in down like in the middle of Paris. And there's guys kicking a soccer ball over traffic to each other, like just having fun. It's like, these people are crazy. So the whole city was just so alive. Oh, and we were there during summer solstice. So it's like,
so everything
was happening. And I'm surprised the World's Fair didn't decide to show up. You know, it's just how it was.
Did you travel with a wheelchair or were you just going with the backpack?
No wheelchair. Yeah.
So nothing from day one. You went into the airport. And I'm like, that's the question that I was thinking right now. What's going through my mind? How did you go through the airport suddenly a guy on a backpack? I'm like,
yeah. Well, we left my wheelchair in the van at the hotel, at the airport hotel, and it was funny because we flew out of Atlanta, which is notorious for being one of the worst, like just time wise, one of the worst airports in the States. Where we actually left ourselves 6 hours of extra time because we thought, because we thought we're going to get there. They're not going to know what to do with us.
I don't think there's any book that explains how to go through customs with a backpack.
Right. Are they going to put me through the x-ray? But I don't know what they're going to do. And so we allowed, I'm not joking, 6 hours of space between arriving at the airport and getting on our plane. And we walk through the front door and this security lady comes right up to us and looks up at me and looks at the other guys and says, yeah, everybody have their luggage? I said, yeah. I said, all right, follow me. And took us right through. We were done in 5 minutes.
Wow.
So we had a few hours at the Atlanta airport.
Sometimes, you know, things happen some people will say for a reason, some people say coincidence, some others will say it. I'm like, there's someone putting the things in place for you, but holy moly, that's...
Yeah, it was crazy. So, so we did that, and then we landed in Paris and took the metro to our apartment and figured it all out. One of our guys, his dad is from Switzerland, and so he speaks, I guess it'd be German and Dutch.
Yeah.
So, right. Yeah. So Philip, you know, as far as figuring out language, he was like, okay, I can kind of navigate us through this, you know, and he was kind of our guide through Paris. It's like, it's a totally different language, but he's got the mind for figuring it out. And so, yeah, he worked out
how people react. And like when you arrive suddenly, you know, on the metro and you're on a backpack, or you go to the Eiffel Tower, or you start walking in France. I'm like,
yeah, there was a lot of staring from people from all over the world, pictures taken, you know, without us realizing it. It's like, oh, I guess we're getting our picture taken. Okay. But I think my favorite was when I would see, well, I'll tell you this one and then two others, but one that happened a lot was like, if we were on the metro or we were on a train, or like sitting, you know, in a cafe or something, you would see someone from far away. It's on the other end of the train car or the subway car or whatever. You would see them kind of look like watch us and not really understand. And then you would see them, it would kind of click. It was cool to me because you didn't need to tell them the story. You know, it was obvious. I'm an unusual size and I'm a little shaped a little weird. So it's obvious there's something wrong with me. And I think by the way that the guys and I are interacting, you can tell that they're just, we're friends. You know, that this is being done out of a different kind of love. And so it was fun to watch people kind of look at us for a minute or a few minutes, and then that kind of click into place, the light bulb come on, and you just see this like smile come across their face, like, oh, that's cool. And then they go back to whatever they were doing, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that was my favorite. Two others that were kind of fun was we were in the subway one day, and it was really cram packed, and I think I was on Tom's back, and this lady was, because it was so packed, she was like right in front of us and facing us, and Tom's really tall, so she was looking up at us and she couldn't look anywhere else, and she just finally was like, okay, I have to ask what's going on. So getting to tell her some of the story was really fun. And then people around you start hearing it, and so they want to be a part of the conversation. And it was just, yeah, it was cool. The other funny story is one day we, I think it was the week that we were in Paris. At the beginning of the week, there was a guy just somewhere on the sidewalk that he didn't speak any English, and so we didn't really have like a conversation with him, but we got that he wanted a picture with us, and so we got a selfie with him. And then at the end of the week, we're standing on a street corner, and this guy walks up next to us and just starts laughing and pulls out his phone, and it's the same guy, and he's like, hey, you know, we know each other. So it's just kind of funny, like the interactions that you end up having. But what I think, going back to your question, what I noticed was there were seven of us, and this was normal for us, right? Like me being in the backpack, we'd walk into a restaurant and the guys knew, all right, this is how we have to turn the chair. This is where we're going to set Kevin down. this is, you know, these are the arrangements we have to make. It was all very normalized by us, by our crew. And so you walk into a room, and for about 30 seconds, it's weird and awkward, but you have seven guys that it's not weird and awkward for. And so the rest of the room kind of adopts that and becomes part of it. And we even we got to, while we were in England, we got invited to like a 5-star Italian restaurant. I've still have never been in such a high-end place. It was so intimidating, especially for guys, you know, just on the road. We have t-shirts and jeans, you know, this is not where we should be, but haven't showered in 5 days, you know, and we're invited to this place, and we walk in and we start rearranging stuff and the chairs and the tables, and the men at the tables around us in their tuxes and suits and ties actually got up to help, you know, because this it was like, oh, this is what you do. All right. So I love that because of the confidence and the comfortability of my friends and me also, I guess, how we presented the situation helped people to walk into it with us.
I think that the more we normalize these things, you know, the more normal they became. Because as I say, a lot of people ask me, I'm like, what do I do if I see someone in the Camino de Santiago with a wheelchair? I'm like, go ask. I'm like, he will tell you there's no issue. If you see someone else, I have another pilgrim that came to Pamplona and in a handbike, she didn't have anyone. So you just ask. And then we make it normal because it still is something that, you know, they don't taught in school or in university, something that, but you know, the more normal we make it, the more normal we become.
People should be allowed to ask and you know, be involved. So, the more the
And
merrier.
did anyone in a wheelchair ever ask you? I'm like, because I guess you saw during the 3 weeks in Europe, you know, someone in a wheelchair. Did anyone, you know, approach you and say, you know, I'm like, what is that?
Trying to think. I don't know if we ran into anyone when we were in Europe. We did when we were in China a few years later. So 2 years later, we went to China and visited a couple of different cities. We were connected with a chain of orphanages that care for children with disabilities. And I remember there, we were in the market one day, and there was a lady in a manual wheelchair, and so a friend of ours, who actually is now my wife, she was working at the orphanage. That's a whole other story, but she was working at the orphanage and was kind of our she was our guide, made sure we didn't get in trouble or anything, and but she's fluent in Chinese, and so she had a conversation with the lady about, you know, wow, what is that, and you know, how are they doing this, and who are these guys that are carrying him, and this is really a unique thing. So, but the biggest response that we got was from people who saw our GoFundMe, saw our trip, families from all over the world that said, you know, that we've been looking for something like this. How do we get a hold of it? And actually, right before we flew out of Atlanta, the night before, we got together with a family there who had written to us and said, "Hey, we just went on vacation to another city in the U.S. that's older, kind of a historic place, and we had to carry our son everywhere, and it would have been really great to have a backpack like this." And so we got together and had pizza with them the night before and let them try out the backpack. And when we flew back to the States, we actually gave them our spare backpack. So that was the first one that we got to give away.
That's amazing. For a lot of people, you know, it's a lot of people, they see people in wheelchairs. We see people in handbikes. There's many different, you know, kinds of wheelchairs. We have the Yolette, we have the adaptable bicycles. Why backpack? What does it change? You know, now that you have tried, what is the difference of being, you know, going somewhere on a backpack or going on a bicycle or a Gillette or any other way of transport?
Yeah. Well, I'll first say an experience that I had with leaving my wheelchair behind is that it wasn't that one was better than the other. You know, by leaving my wheelchair behind, I was trading one type of freedom for another type of freedom. With my wheelchair, I can decide where I want to go whenever I want, as long as it's accessible. With the backpack, it has to be a conversation. The person carrying me has to want to do it as well, or at least be willing to go. But we're not limited by what would typically be considered accessible. I mean, we were hopping over fences in the English countryside. You know, you're not going to do that with a wheelchair. And so, you know, with the Gillette or the bikes, you know, I think each one has its purpose, and each one has its gifts and its limitations. I think the reason I enjoy the backpack for this kind of thing is because there are no wheels involved. And so when you get to a rocky terrain, you don't have to think, oh, this is going to be bumpy for this person, or this is going to be too steep. It's, if a person's legs can handle this, then you're going to be okay. So, you know, you can climb ladders. I remember shortly after going to Europe, we got invited to Southern California to speak at a big church there and share our story. And the day before, we went to check it out, and the guy giving us the tour said, "Hey, do you guys want to go up in the rafters and the catwalk?" And it's like, sure, why not? And so because we had the backpack, we could, you know, climb this ladder up, you know, I don't know, 100 feet in the air on into these rafters. And so, yeah, as long as someone's back is sturdy and they're willing to work with other people, because sometimes you need other people to keep you balanced or, you know, give you some support. The Great Wall of China was a great example of that. So we needed as many people as possible to trade off carrying, and we needed people to hold and, you know, hold your hand and hold the back of the backpack. And it was crazy. But yeah, as long as you got people, you're good to go.
That's one of the things. I'm like, your journey is not, you know, I'm like, it's a journey of love. I'm like, the love from your friends, your family, and everyone. Because at the end, you know, Carrie Kevin isn't, as you were saying, you know, they need you, but you need the rest, and everybody needs the rest, because there needs to be a team. How has the love and support from your friends, and how has your friends changed from, you know, the day that you embark into this journey till the end of, or the first, you know, Evan journey, or till now?
You know, I think, well, that's, I mean, what, do we have another hour?
I think we will have to go into a deeper one once you come over to Pamplona. We will have a more relaxed, but just summarize it, you know, because a lot of people, when they talk about the Camino, I'm like, you know, the connections you make in the Camino from people that are totally unknown to you, you open yourself so much. So that's one of the things that, you know, if you listen to any of the interviews, a lot of people, they go to the Camino and they open themselves, because we all carry something in our backpacks, you know, that is, that's just waiting on us. But in your journey, I'm like, there's totally, people were carrying you, but also they were friends. So I cannot imagine how much the bond between friends with a living 3 weeks in Europe can be.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing about not taking my wheelchair at all on the trip is, you know, we would have these epic hikes and walks, you know, throughout the day, these 8 or 10 hour days or longer, you know, and you get back to the house at 2 in the morning after this long, awesome day of exploring wherever we were. But we get back and I'm still in the backpack, you know, they still have to help me with eating or brushing my teeth or getting ready for bed. They're like, it's not like, all right, now we put him back in his wheelchair and he's good to go. So their care for me was actually 24/7. It was the seen care and the unseen, you know, and the real sacrificial love that doesn't get praised and doesn't get adorned by the world for being epic and cool. And so I think, you know, to answer your question, because they were already friends, I knew that they cared for me. I knew that they loved me and I loved them. But this whole interaction, this whole experience together in Europe, and then, well, let's just stick with Europe for now. It forced all of us into such a deeper sense of vulnerability, that I think those connections went deeper, but also just learning about ourselves went deeper. And then, you know, as I've gone on from there, and I think the way that I invite people into my need, into my my life now, is very much informed by those 3 weeks, because I've seen what happens when you completely let yourself go, and you well, that's not the right way to put it. You completely open yourself up to say, "Hey, I need you," and you may not do things the way that I would do them if I could, but and I'm not just gonna put up with that. I'm gonna celebrate that, and I'm gonna celebrate that we're doing this together. And yeah, I just think that's really impacted my life, and some of these guys have, well, one of the guys actually has had a couple of kids now. You know, a few of them were already married, but one of them has started having kids, and he has said like how this has affected the way that he cares for his children because of the way that he had to care for me. Mm-hmm. And Tom and I are still very close. We're going to see each other next month. We live in different states now, but we always look forward to being together. And but yeah, I think, you know, I'm writing a book right now called The Hospitality of Need. And it's this idea that within our need, there's an element of hospitality that we can say, come with me into my need. Let's meet it together. And through that, I want you to be served as well. You know,
that's so beautiful, because, you know, in the Camino de Santiago, the albergues, the hostels, they're not called, you know, in the old days, they were called hospitals. And the people, right, that welcomes you, they are hospitaleros.
Right.
And the whole point of the hospitality in the Camino is that I'm opening myself to you, you open to me, and whatever you have and I can help you.
Yeah.
Let's get there together.
Yeah, it should be a reciprocal thing. It's not a, you know, I have a need and so it needs to be met. It's how can I use my need to actually care for you by inviting you into it. And so, yeah, I all that to say, I think working on this book, a lot of it points back to that trip and seeing how it affected us as a group, as well as the world around us that we got to interact with. And so I'm just thankful for that. I just think it's brought more depth and clarity to my own life and these guys' lives of how to love people.
Did you ever imagine when you started the We Carry Kevin, the first campaign, that this was going to happen?
Oh, no, not at all. No. I didn't even know if the trip would happen, so let alone all of this. But back in November, we gave away our 1,000th backpack.
Wow.
And
that's amazing. I'm like, for everybody, I don't know, that's just incredible. I'm like, the amount of work that you have to do to all of these things, the nonprofit that's worked this way, I'm like, yeah, it's unbelievable that already 1,000 backpacks are all over the world.
Yeah, 45 countries, and all of it has been word of mouth, because these families say, wow, this works for us, and so we want more people to know about it. And so it's just been encouraging to humbling and encouraging to be part of that. I don't feel like it's anything I've done. It's just something that I'm along for the ride with.
And when would this happen? I'm like, was it when you were back from the first trip that suddenly I'm like, you know, we need to make this bigger. We need to make a nonprofit, or was something that suddenly, you know, built little by little.
There, because we had started hearing from families before the trip, you know, when things started really rolling with the fundraiser, families started writing to us from all over the world. And so I kind of started getting an inkling that maybe we should do something when we get home. But it was really on the train ride, to the airport, on our last day that, we were just kind of sitting on the train going, well, you know, just like with the sewers, well, we survived this. What do we do next?
What is next?
And so the two things that we thought of were, well, ultimately we realized this can't be about Kevin because we're going to get bored and the audience is going to get bored. So we need to do more. We need to make it about other people. And so the two things that we decided was starting the nonprofit that would answer those two questions. Where'd you get this backpack? Where'd you get these friends? And just try and come alongside families that want to think outside the box with accessibility. And then the second thing was we started considering how we could go to China. That was a dream that
Why
we had.
China?
that, yeah, I, there's a lot to that, but, one of our guys had been, he had gone before with his, brother and sister-in-law. They were adopting a little girl from China and, with disabilities. And so he had gone and kind of experienced, how, the culture perceives disabilities. And felt like maybe that was somewhere that we could go. And, part of that was, you know, that I was telling you earlier about how, people would see us from across the train car and it would just click of what we were doing. Well, we wondered where could we go where the language and culture barriers were so vast that we had to be a spectacle. We couldn't depend on our words or our preconceived notions. We had to just show up and let people put it together themselves of this ridiculous kind of love that these guys have for each other. And so from Ben's experience in China just some connections that we had and realizing that, well, if you want a different language and culture, you're not going to get much farther than that. So we kind of set out to see if we can make that happen. And sure enough, we did. And it was an amazing place with really wonderful people that we got to spend time with. And we got to see that, see our vision kind of happen where we got to see, you know, people come up to us and shake our hands and give us thumbs up and high fives and say like, wow, you're doing a great thing. In a culture that would otherwise normally say, well, if you don't have the ability to contribute, then, you know, your worth is different. And so, we just love getting to do that, getting to be part of that. I think our favorite part of that was visiting the orphanages and just getting to be with the staff and the kids and rolling around on the floor with these kids and spending time with the staff and encouraging them. And as I mentioned earlier, that's where I met the amazing woman that would become my wife. And so, yeah, that's...
You know, another connection to the Camino. So many people know their wife or the significant other in the Camino de Santiago. So,
yeah.
Yes, you know, yeah. There's always a reason for the journey. There's always a reason for almost everything. And
yeah,
who knows where they're going to lead you.
Yeah. So yeah, it was just a great experience. And that was 2018. And I think You know, a lot of people have asked where we're going next, and I mentioned a few earlier, including El Camino, that we'd love to do. But I think right now our adventure is the human heart and just connecting with these families that keep reaching out, and not just giving them a backpack, but giving them a friendship and a relationship to connect with and walk through some of this stuff with. So explain
to everyone, cool. You know, because we talk a lot about We Carry Kevin, but what do you guys do as a nonprofit? You just not provide the backpack, you do further, and also where people can, you know, reach you or where they can find you. And I'm going to put here the website. You can see wecarrykevin.org, and also will be on the notes, all the, you know, social media, but how can they, you know, approach you, how they can contact with you?
Yeah. So the mission statement of We Carry Kevin is that we want to redefine accessibility to not just be about, you know, automatic doors and ramps and stuff like that, but actually getting back to the core of people helping people. We just really believe that community, more than community, the deeper community in the deeper sense, the friendship, let's say, is where true accessibility comes from. And so a lot of what we do on the surface is get backpacks to families. And so we do that through, people can just buy the backpack outright, but a lot of our families can't afford it or can't afford the shipping. You know, shipping all over the world is crazy. And so,
yeah.
And so we do have a crowdfunding campaign that we set up for families on our website, kind of in keeping with We Carry Kevin and how we got our start. I will say as a side note that it's always been a conviction of mine to keep the price of the backpack similar to what a normal able-bodied family would pay for a child carrier, you know, so it's pretty comparable. It's about $500, which I think a normal Deuter child carrier is about that.
Oh, it's around that.
Yeah. So we have the crowdfunding and people can also just purchase it. But what we really love to do, and it's maybe a little more behind the scenes, is that anyone who reaches out about a backpack, they now have a new friend. Because if they would like, you know, people can just buy the backpack and move on with their lives. But if they would like, we want to keep in touch. And so my sister, Connie, is our director of family engagement. And so she spends her days emailing and doing phone calls and Zoom calls and keeping up with all these families. And so she's got 1,000 pen pals all over the world. And so some of that looks like, hey, you just, you know, I'm just calling to check in. And, oh, our daughter was just in the hospital. And, oh, can we just talk about that and pray with you and spend time with you? Other times it's like, oh, it's Christmas. Let's send this family a Christmas card or a gift basket, or, you know, and then we've also been really fortunate to have some grants in which we can just go and visit families. So we've gotten to do that and just sit. Just as a way of saying you're not alone and we're in this with you. Our goal, I feel like the backpack part of it is really moving smoothly. We've been doing that since 2019. And so turning our attention more to that, to connecting to families, connecting families with other families, connecting families with their own communities. We're actually working right now with a nonprofit that I don't know how to explain it, but basically we're going to work with them to develop a platform in which, you know, a family could say, hey, we have a backpack and we would love someone to come with us for a hike. We'll need some help. And it'll be set up where other people, you know, you could be signed up and just say, oh, I'm hey, I'd love to come. I'd love to just come do a hike with you guys. And so maybe that leads to, oh, I did a hike with you, but, you know, I'd love to come and do this other thing with you, or I see that you need this too, or now you're just friends, you know? And so, yeah, our goal right now is to really connect people with each other more, because that's the sustainable part, right? Backpacks eventually will fall apart and people will grow out of them. You know, things happen and yet, you know, connections and friendships are what can continue. So
totally agree.
Be more a part of that.
That's amazing. I'm like, and is there, you know, like in a short, I know we already in over an hour, but any story that, you know, any backpack that you feel most proud that has gone somewhere, is there anything that really resonates when you think, you know, I love that this person or this family is having this backpack?
Oh man, there's a lot of them. I remember getting, you know, it's funny. A lot of these families, they'll send us videos and photos that I'm like, I would never do that. You know, that I thought I was crazy.
That's breaking the rules.
Right, yeah. But, you know, like one mom sent us a picture of her carrying her daughter across a frozen lake. And I'm like, wow. Okay, wow. You know, another dad carried his son up a volcano. You know, just crazy stuff. But then there's a family actually not far from us here that they live on a farm. And they use the backpack every day to take their son out to feed the chickens. And
wow.
You know, it's because then the parents get that quality experience with their son every day. And so I think stuff like that is just really, really cool as well. And I remember one more is, you know, because you have these families that go on wild adventures. You have some that use it for stuff like that, you know, like around the farm. And then there was a family, I think they were in the Philippines, who said, well, they filled out the information for a crowdfunding. And one of the questions is, you know, how will you use the backpack? What will it help you with? And the mom said, well, we can't afford, we don't have a handicap van, and we can't afford the taxi, and the buses aren't accessible in our area. So using the backpack will actually allow us to take our child to, the doctor and physical therapy, you know? And so it can be the wild, you know, amazing camping trips and taking your kid to the zoo, or it can be, oh, this is how we get him to the doctor. Yeah. I just love that this thing that my friends and I put together because we wanted to have a goofy trip to Europe has turned into such a intricate part of so many people's lives, and just thankful and humbled to be a part of that.
It's amazing that something, as you say, you know, something so stupid as, you know, going in a goofy adventure to Europe suddenly becomes the tool where people can have a normal life thanks to that, and nobody thought about it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have two goofy adventures for you that I would love to. As we say, you know, the Camino de Santiago will be incredible to have you guys here. If we can have a community event, you know, a couple of backpacks, I'm like, it will be incredible. I think the idea of creating a platform where you can, you know, give your time to people that want to go outside, that will be incredible. So count me in for that. And also, you know, I'm from Pamplona, the place of the running of the bulls. So if your friends are up for a crazy adventure, think that will be a great documentary part two of We Carry Kevin. Kevin goes to the Running of the Bulls.
Oh, man.
I don't think it will be allowed to run, but just living the Running of the Bulls with you guys will be an amazing adventure.
What I'm worried about is if I bring that up to Tom, I won't.
He'll say yes.
He'll just say yes, and we'll just be there.
Hey, you have one career. I'm here. And I will find a couple more.
All right. And how's your running?
My running good. I run marathon almost twice a year and a couple half marathons, so I keep myself in good shape.
Okay. All right. And what time of year is the running of the Bulls?
In July. It starts on the 6th of July.
Okay.
From the 6th to the 15th.
Wow. That's really long.
Yeah. It's 8 days full party. I'm like, for the locals, I'm like, we stay for a couple of days. I'm like, it's too much. But, you know, you crazy Americans, New Zealands, and Australians, it's just, it's once in a lifetime. You know, a lot of people, they see the running of the Bulls with the eyes of, you know, crazy party. But also there's a little beautiful, there's a lot of history, there's a lot of family time, there's a lot of great things to do. It's not just the craziness of just getting wasted.
Right.
But it will be an adventure. That's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, I'll get back to you on that. So.
No, I'm for sure we need to talk again. But again, thank you so much for your journey. And like, I totally agree, you know, and even you haven't walked the Camino, you are already walking another kind of Camino. And you know, that's where we find the importance of people, of doing things. And sometimes, you know, I realize in my own journey that when I do things to others, I get even much more of giving to others than doing for myself. So sometimes, you know, a lot of people, I think, oh, I'm seeing, you know, when I help others, it's like, it's so selfish. Because I feel much better from what I'm doing that the others, what the others get. No, but I think if we all do this, the world will be a much better place. And I think with We Carry Kevin, you just guys hit, you know, totally target. The backpack is a tool, but the connections, the families, the people is what matters. And who knows what will be in the, you know, 20 years, maybe there's an air backpack, you know, that flies in the air or something, but I'm sure there will be many, many, many projects. So for that, thank you. And thank you. I'm like, we just met today and, you know, the connection is right there. So I hope that we can walk soon and I will be one more of the We Carry Kevin family.
Definitely. Thank you, Jose.
For everyone, remember to go to We Carry Kevin for anyone that is wishing to have a backpack or wants to make a donation or work with the time or just help. If you have a crazy idea, just contact them. And, you know, the more crazy people in this world, the better. So thank you so much. And as what we always say in the Camino, buen camino, ultrella.